The 100 Years' War, the Crecy period, the Battle of Obroche. The precise sequence of the battle at Obroche is relatively obscure. What appears to have happened is this. Louis of Poitiers successfully relieved Perigeux, forcing the main body of the Anglo-Gascon army to withdraw. And then the French began a slow, methodical reconquest of the surrounding strongholds. Henry of Lancaster had left garrisons in all the more important strongholds in order to maintain a pressure on Perigeux and to delay the progress of the French army. Around the middle of October, the French laid siege to one of these strongholds, mainly the castle of Obroche. In the 14th century, it was the site of a large noble's fortress belonging to one of the many petty lords of Perigord who had, quote, turned English, end of quote. The castle had surrendered to the English as soon as the English army had arrived. Henry of Lancaster placed its defenses in the hands of Alexander de Caumont, a fearless old man who was one of the principal Gascon lords in the English army. The French besiegers basically just sat outside the castle of Obroche for quite some time. Then, on the morning of October the 21st, 1345, Henry of Lancaster's forces suddenly arrived and attacked. They approached during the night with the main body of the Anglo-Gascon army. The French suffered heavy casualties from English archers before the French could even move in the firing range. Although the sheer size of the French army appeared to give them the initial advantage, by midday the French wavered and decided to fall back. Just as the French lines broke, the garrison inside the castle now sortied out. Now Henry's men-at-arms remounted their horses. The combined force now pursued the various groups of fleeing French troops, inflicting tremendous damage. Louis of Poitiers was captured after a savage fight. Unfortunately, he ended up dying of his wounds. He was a courageous and loyal servant to the French crown and had fought in every major campaign since 1338. Also captured was Bertrand Desile. He refused to say he would surrender, but he was too valuable to kill, so he was simply overpowered and dragged away in the captivity. Now, this gives me an opportunity to talk a little bit about POWs. So let's first of all look at what else, or I should say who else, ended up in Anglo-Gascon hands after the Battle of Obroche. They captured one count, seven viscounts, three barons, the seneschals of Toulouse, the seneschal of Clermont, 12 bannerets, the nephew of Pope Clement VI, and countless knights. The ransoms paid were even higher here than the English Gascons had collected after taking Bergerac. So, what did they collect? Now, the system varied. The only one that we have really good records on is Agincourt. But basically what would happen is whoever captured the individual would make a bargain with him as to what the price was. You would take him to another individual in your army and they would record this. Then that prisoner would then be put in a grouping and guarded, and then you could go back and fight if you needed to. And money would vary based on who they were, who you were doing the capturing. You didn't have to pay as much to a common soldier as you did to a nobleman, and so forth and so on. But there is actually a prisoner convention. So the prisoner convention at this time was POWs were not state affairs. They were private property of the person who captured them. The person who captured them could do a variety of things. They could sell them to somebody else to extract the ransom from, or they could mortgage them. They could take a loan out on them and then negotiate the price for the ransom. They would then be detained at the pleasure of the person who captured them. Usually not put in dungeons, they're usually kept according to their station. And of course, you made your terms with them. How much was going to be paid, when it was going to be paid, who was going to pay it. Now, the extract of the money fell within very broad limits and was fixed by custom of war as well as the law of contract. So much so that POWs released on parole defined their ransoms. See, this is what happens. You don't have enough money. You can sign a document saying that in a certain amount of time, I will go out, gather the money up, and return either with the money or turn myself back over to you. However, some people will do that and just not come back. That's where you get a problem because they basically have signed a document stating that they would do that. If that took place, the person who is absconding could expect to find their bargains enforced against them in their own country by the code of honor of their class and even by the courts of the king in whose service they had been captured. Prisoners were by far the most valuable pieces of war. They were pursued in many cases with greater energy than important military objectives, and even occasionally at the expense of the military objective. The battles of Bergerac and Auberoche opened the eyes of both sides to the financial rewards of victory on the battlefield and the catastrophic consequences for defeat. Now, Henry of Lancaster's army profits immensely. We don't have the total amount. The Battle of Agincourt brought in approximately 30 million pounds, or 30 million, I should say, $30 million worth of ransom, which is a huge sum of money, and it's broken down. And when I do the Battle of Agincourt at some point in the future, I'll give you the breakdown on who received what and all sorts of other stuff. Now, the prizes from Bergerac that, you know, everybody gets their share, and of course, some people surrender to the leaders, which that, of course, helps Henry of Lancaster. Henry of Lancaster's prizes from Bergerac covered the entire cost at 17,333 pounds for rebuilding the Savoy Palace in the Strand. And he made another 50,000 pounds from the ransoms from the Battle of Auberoche. So it's very, very profitable. The Battle of Auberoche marked the end of the French campaign of 1345 in the southwest of France. Although the Duke of Normandy was only 25 miles away when the battle was fought and commanded a fresh army larger than the one that was defeated. But he abandoned the effort as soon as he heard the bad news. His troops returned to Angoulême and were then disbanded on November the 4th, 1345. Duke Jean led his entourage north to lay plans for the following year in the castle of Châtillon-sur-d'Indre. It may have been not cowardice, but simply a shortage of money that left him no alternative. We know that the Seneschal of Beaucaire had been complaining since September that not only were his men unpaid, but they did not have the wherewithal to even feed themselves and their horses. Some men had sold their equipment and deserted. The position is unlikely to have been better at the end of October and was probably worse. Even so, the Duke of Normandy's decision to withdraw from the field was remarkable, and it had serious consequences for the French war effort, and this particularly in the southwest, because now there's no one to oppose Henry of Lancaster, the Earl of Derby, in the field between November of 1345 and March of 1346. So he's going to be collecting quite a bit of money during that time period and taking care of a lot of extra land. The other thing, too, we've had enough trouble with Philip VI not attacking Edward when he had the opportunity and compromising and ended up, you know, putting truces out, making it actually better for Edward than it was for the French. Now, here we have the heir to the throne who doesn't move forward. He doesn't come to the aid of the other army. He withdraws. And the noblemen are probably thinking, oh, no, we got another gentleman who's just not very militarily interested. And so this makes it harder to get the troops together. At any rate, the sources for this, 100 Years War by Perrois, the 100 Years War by Nylands, and the 100 Years War, Volume 1, Trial by Battle by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.